This is Detention, a podcast dedicated to candid conversations about education. I'm your host, Dr. Nadia Lopez, a global leader, author, speaker, coach, consultant, and entrepreneur who opened a school to close a prison. Join me as I share my insights and bring fellow disruptors to serve time in conversation. Rebels, let's get into some good trouble. Welcome to a new episode of Detention. I'm so excited to be back. I know it's been a while since you've heard my voice, but I just needed to take time for my mental health. And given the circumstances of the media attention that has been recently in the news, I needed to take a moment for self-reflection, because in the past, I would be that person who pushes through when something difficult or negative happens in my life. And that would just lead to me internalizing things that ultimately affects me physically. And I can't afford that. You know, that was the reason why I resigned from my position. And I do not want to get to a place where I'm sick, because I am dealing with a situation that I just need to lean into my feelings. And I took this as an opportunity to take a step away, to get counsel, to get therapy, to surround myself with positive friends, activities, and just recognize not just who I am, but what this means in the grand scheme of things. And so I want to get into it, because there may be some folks who are like, what is happening? What is she talking about? So let's just start, right? On April 30th, there was an article that was published by the New York Post, and it was entitled, "Hero Ex-Principal Nadia Lopez Banned from School She Founded." And I would say that I need to give you background context, because it sounds really bad, but you be the judge once you hear it, okay? So when I resigned from Mount Hope Bridges Academy in 2020, July 1st, actually, it was because I had been dealing with the recovery of a autoimmune kidney disease that was caused by work-related stress. Now, being a principal is very difficult, but when you are disruptive and you're fighting against the system and you are dealing with microaggressions, you're dealing with bullying, you're dealing with lack of support, it takes its toll. And I did a lot of internalizing, which then led to this autoimmune disease. After fighting for my life and making sure that my health had recovered, I made the decision to resign, but my successor was someone that I had trained, who was my assistant principal. And she had done a phenomenal job in my absence and continued to do so until the New York City Department of Education put in a vaccine mandate that impacted a lot of the staff members at Mount Hope Bridges Academy. So this resulted in two interim principals being placed at the school. The first one didn't last long. The second one was an individual who didn't necessarily have a principal experience. And to be quite honest and fair, I don't know much about them outside of the short time that I was able to engage in conversations with this individual. But I will say this. When you are in Brownsville, it takes a special type of person as it relates to energy, desire to be there, commitment, and understanding the community, right? It's a lot. It's not an easy feat. And again, I'm not speaking on behalf of this individual and saying that they lack that, but you have to be prepared for what is expected when you go into that community. So with that said, this change happened in November of 2021. by January, I was receiving phone calls and text messages from staff members who basically said there was a significant shift that happened at the school, that the scholars' behavior had declined, the morale of the team was very low, and they felt like they weren't being heard or acknowledged. I gave, you know, advice as much as I could because I was not in the state of New York. So I told them, put it in writing and send it to the principal. Ask for a meeting. And then if those things don't work, you request that your union step in. Many of those individuals tried each of those steps, but didn't feel like their voices were being heard. So you had two founding teachers who decided that they were actually going to leave the school completely and work in other schools. And I just want you to understand that working in New York City, you just don't leave a school. You actually have to get the principal to release you. But they were adamant about not staying. And these are individuals who worked at the school since 2010. In March, I received a text message from a staff member who had been there at this point 10 years, and they felt like there was nothing left that they could give to their position because it had become too much of a daunting task. And that they informed me that the mental health provider that I had hired since 2010 to ensure that every staff member had access to mental health services was leaving as well. Now, this might have been like a Thursday. And I told the individual, well, you know, I have to come back to New York, but I'm not going to be there that long. But if I'm able to, I will try my best to come and stop by and see if they're okay. And they said, you know what, that would be great because I know your presence will give a boost to the team and get us through June. I said, okay. This Sunday, I decided to reach out to the mental health provider and ask them why would they no longer provide services. And they told me, you know, in all full honesty, that the principal wanted them to divulge the names of the teachers who had been seeking their services, as well as the times that they would meet, and wanted to know if anything was said in regards to the morale of the school or about them. And the mental health provider said, I can't do that. You know, I've never had to do that. And that's a breach of confidentiality. And so the principal hadn't paid them. And this was going on since November. And so at this point, the provider said they weren't doing the services anymore. So I said, you know what? I will stop by the school tomorrow. Again, this is a Sunday. I went out. I bought all of these items to create mini care packages for the staff. Because in March, we've coined it March Madness because there's normally no breaks during that month. Teachers are at their wits' end. The children, you know, they are a challenge and a half. And it's a way of empathizing and recognizing, I know the work is hard, but I want you to be reminded that I'm thinking of you. So I put all of these mini packages together. It was about 45 of them. And I also took a gift, put together a gift for the principal. I went in to the school, signed in with the safety officer. They called the main office. I went upstairs. The principal greeted me when I went into the office and I told her, you know, I apologize for not giving her advance notice. I had come there to see one of the teachers who I mentor. And if she had an opportunity for us to speak, you know, I didn't want to impose on her time. And she said, no, that would be fine. She just had to walk the floor and she would be back. At this time, I'm standing in the main office and there's a young person who comes in and literally goes off on the secretary, even using expletives. And I said to the young person, why would you talk to her like that? And they then proceeded to say, you know, this is, you know, this, the, she always coming at me and this is, how I'm speaking to her. And I said, well, you know, that's not the way you speak to people. So the individual, you know, was very dismissive. And I said, do me a favor, tell your mom and your sister I said hello. And then they kind of just looked at me because I had my mask on at the time. I said, tell them Dr. Lopez said hi. The young person ran out of the office and was like, oh, I gotta go, I gotta go. And so there were young ladies who said, wait, what happened? And he said, I messed up, I gotta go. The principal had that at that point come back to the office and saw me speaking to a couple of the young folks because they were extremely late. I then went into the office with her. We spent about an hour talking about the various, things related to the school, mission and vision, the mental health provider, the ways in which he would engage with the team, providing professional development, how I would give up my office as a way of telling the teachers and all of the staff members, this is a space that I'm willing to prioritize for your wellness. I'm willing to go somewhere else twice a week so that you all have the privacy you need. We also talked about some of the challenges with the scholars in terms of their behaviors and just how the principal needed to engage the parents along with all of the teachers, because sometimes there's this thing where parents feel like a particular teacher is bullying or targeting their child. But the reality is that the child may have had issues in multiple classes, and there's just one particular teacher who engages in conversations a lot by calling the parent. But if you have all of the teachers during common planning time, or when there's a time, day of the week that teachers are supposed to meet with parents after school, you can utilize that time for the parent to come up to meet with all of the teachers at the same time. So we talked about those different things and also some of the initiatives that was no longer in place that would have been beneficial, had she kept them. After that, our conversation was done. I then give the principal a bag, which was a gift for her, and it just is a way of saying, here's what you need to do in terms of self-care. And I give it out to all of the principals or APs that I coach. So inside there's a mug, and I go through each one with her. I said, here's a mug. It's a reminder that you are not to pour from anything empty. Here's a candle because this is the only thing that should burn out and it's not you. Here's a box of tea. The purpose of this is as a reminder that it's gonna get really hard doing this job. You're gonna have to close your doors, sip on some tea, and then use your journal to capture the notes for your reflection. And then I gave her a copy of my book, and I didn't give it to her as bragging rights in any way, shape, or form. I said, I want you to understand why I opened the school and what is required because it's really, really hard. And the only way that can ever come across is through the book, which you can read or you don't have to. But I do want to thank you for taking on this position because I know it's a daunting task. And then I showed her the little care packages and told her that I would be going to each classroom to distribute it to the teachers. And she said, fine. She, you know, thanked me for the gift, told me that I was thoughtful. And then I proceeded to go into different classes. I did what I always do, take pictures of scholars doing great work, because I like to amplify their voices. And then I noticed that there were some scholars throughout the time I was there in the hallway when they should have been in class. And in particular, they were like this group of girls who were in by a door. And I said to them, what, like, why are you out here? And they said, oh, we got kicked out and thought it was funny. And I said, do you know who I am? And they said, oh, we heard that you're the principal of the school. I said, I am. And so I'm kind of confused as to why. Not the principal of the school, the founder, you opened the school. And I said, yes. And so I'm kind of confused as to why you're outside in the hallway, because when I opened the school, I didn't intend for you to be roaming the halls. Like, instruction happens in the classroom. And so your representation of me, even if I'm not the principal, someone is going to come in this building. They already have a negative idea about young people in Brownsville, but especially when it comes to black girls. you're seen as problematic, you're seen as attitudinal. And so they will just fit you in with the stereotype as opposed to, you know, what's really going on in the classroom. And I said, so why are you in the hallway? And they said, well, you know, we were talking. And I said, well, should you be doing that? No. And are you a positive representation of me? They both agreed that they weren't. And so I said, do you think maybe you could go back to class? And they agreed. And so I told the teacher, you know, I knocked on the door and I said to her, I just spoke to them. I'm not saying you have to take them in right now, but I do think that they're ready for a conversation. And, you know, I apologize for interrupting. She said, no, absolutely not. You don't have to apologize. Thank you so much. And I did that with a couple of other scholars who were just acting up in class and, you know, the classes that I passed by. And so I could see where the teachers were feeling away and saying there was a decline in student behavior, scholars' behaviors, and how things were being managed. I ended up leaving and didn't have an opportunity to talk to the principal. So essentially, I sent an email to her and I shared once again my thank you for her taking time. I reiterated all of the things as it related to the school's vision and mission. And I shared with her, you know, the ways in which she needed to consider engaging with the school community. Like if there's low morale, just check in with the team, you know, make time, not just during evaluations, but during like walkthroughs, just check in and say hi. I also gave her some recommendations about, you know, how to manage meetings, because she said she hadn't had any meetings with any of her staff. And this relates to the admin team, the cabinet team, her secretary, support services, which would include the parent coordinator, the director of partners. I was like, you have to be consistent with your meetings. And I explained to her why, because it's, you know, essentially these are the people that's going to help you move the machine. But you have to have goals in place and check in and have people give you feedback so you know where to modify whatever that's happening and find solutions that will make everything run smoother. So we get to all of that. And from my understanding, the conversation went, that was fine. You know, she didn't respond back and I never heard anything. So that was in March. April, I was flown up the same day as the shooting in New York City. I found out about a taping of a documentary that Ebony Davis, who is a model and also a mentee of mine, wanted me to participate in. We have been trying to get this date together for a long time. They called me on the 11th in like 11 o'clock at night. Bought a plane ticket for me, flew me out on the Tuesday. Wednesday, I had to go by the vicinity of the school, not inside the school, but on the outside of it at the corner, in which we were going to do this recording of this documentary that featured Ebony and one of my graduates, Laquana. And Ebony started a nonprofit called Daughters Org. Daughters Org takes young women 18 to 24 to Ghana, for a 17-day immersion experience where they reconnect to their roots. And Laquana happened to be one of my graduates who is part of a recent cohort. And so this showed the intergenerational connection between my influence on Ebony as her mentor, and now she was serving as a mentor to Laquana, and how I was Laquana's principal. So it was all connected. We had a really great conversation at the park across the street from the school. And then Laquana started asking, once we wrapped up, about different teachers at the school. We talked about, you know, how they weren't there, but there was one in particular, her math teacher, that she wanted to see. And I said, you know, it's lunchtime and we could go and see Ms. Graham. And we did that. We walked into the building. I signed in and I saw one of the safety agents who I had a really great relationship with. And she shared with me that her son had been murdered in Atlanta and that she was scheduled to go get his personal effects and how hard it was. and that was her only child. And so, you know, we had that moment, and thereafter I went upstairs, and Laquana saw her eighth grade teacher, who was also her step coach, and I seen two of my graduates who are now paraprofessionals in the school. One is going to be a dad. The next one decided that she's going to go back to school to become a special education teacher. So it was heartfelt moment. We walked down the hallway. The principal passes us. I said hello to her. Go into the main office again. She didn't return back. So we go to Ms. Graham's room, which is right in the vicinity of the main office. And she got to see Laquan, and it was such a special moment because, again, this whole idea when people see someone, especially young people, return back to the school, it's a sweet reminder of your why, especially in the most difficult times. The way you pour into the scholars, the way you show up even when you're tired, but to see where they are as young adults, it is the icing on top of the cake. And so they had this great moment, and Laquana said, oh, you know, the principal is down, like she's looking in this direction. And I said, you know what, let's go and speak to her because I don't want her thinking I arbitrarily came into the building. And we did that. I went, I introduced her to Laquana. I shared with her that we were in the vicinity doing this recording of a film to show our connection with the school, but then also Laquana going on a trip to Africa. She asked Laquana what part of Africa. When Laquana said Ghana, she said, oh, I'm from Nigeria. And they had this amazing exchange. Thereafter, we left. This is all within 30 minutes. I get downstairs. I am approached by the superintendent and the deputy superintendent, who announces that she was there to see me. It was very busy on that first floor because it's the main floor. And she said, you know, I'm here to see you because your presence creates tension. And I was taken aback. And I said, my presence creates tension. She says, I know that you provide coaching, you're a mentor, and you offer resources to the school. But given this climate and circumstances, the principal just doesn't feel comfortable. And would rather you not come back to the building. And I said, well, we were just talking to her, and I'm literally here because Laquana, who's a graduate, wanted to see one of her former teachers. And so Laquana waves, the superintendent waves back at her, and she says, yeah, well, I'm just here to let you know, out of respect for you and your contributions to the district, that you are not to return back to the school. And so I looked, and I couldn't believe it. And I say to Laquana, let's go. And so all of this transpired. And, you know, I want to get into why this is so triggering and what this means in the broader sense of things. So let me be clear. The language that was used was that I was unauthorized, that I made several unauthorized visits to the school, that I engaged in the violation of policies by taking pictures of children, and that I was critical of the current administration. There are certain words that are used to criminalize people. And it's not being overdramatic when I say this. We have to recognize how words are used as weapons to disparage and destroy one's reputation, or to try to galvanize individuals to believe there was some wrongdoing and someone is deserving of ill treatment. The use of unauthorized would mean that I trespassed in a building. I did not. First off, it's a school. It's a public school. People come in and out of school buildings all the time. Vendors come in without being announced. Former teachers, parents, former students come in all the time. The community that we've developed at Mott Hall, children come back every day, all day, because it's a second home. It is a place where you know you have someone who's going to be in your corner, who has your back, and it can be a place of refuge. That's how the school culture was built, because that's what it was for me when I was a scholar, when I was a young person. Okay? When I was in middle school, my parents separated. I stayed in the school building till I was, you know, till like 9, 10 o'clock at night with the administrators, the principal, the assistant principals, and there were several of them. And I got taken home every single night at that hour. I did my homework. I got to work in the office and I mind my business. But my experience is what helped me to create a school that would do the same for young people who needed that at a time when you're going through something and you may not use the words, but people create a space that is healing and it allows you to feel safe. So if I was unauthorized in any way, it would require them to call NYPD to say that I trespass. If I was unauthorized in any way, New York City Department of Education has a legal team. When you have to provide a limited access to anyone who's in violation, whether it's termination of services as a staff member, whether it's threatening, because we've had that with parents, or some type of abuse, there is a letter that's generated through legal counsel that has to be served to the person in violation in any way, shape, or form. I did not receive a letter. I did not receive a phone call because I had not done anything wrong. I signed in. I went upstairs and I spoke to the principal, not once, but twice. So that's the first thing. The second thing, to say that I was in violation of policies by taking pictures of young people and then posting it on my account. If you look at my Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn, I'm always posting pictures of children. The whole purpose is we have to change the narrative about Brownsville. There's always this negative connotation that they are part of gangs, that they steal, that they're not good enough. They never see themselves in a positive light, highlighted in any capacity in media, right? So from day one, we've always given the scholars paperwork that their parents have to sign that's a waiver. See, the problem is that the person who is now the principal doesn't know that, and they came in November, so they wouldn't know that there are waivers on file. And the reason why we did this is because we always had media come in since day one. Since our first year, we were featured in the Daily News because we had a special social media etiquette class that we put into our school. Our kids were featured on Brick, which is a local news station. Our kids have been featured on News 12, which is another local news station. But even at the time of Humans of New York, which brought us a lot of notoriety, we were constantly being highlighted, and there were so many entities that we had to make sure that we had these releases. So every single year, the releases are on there because people who come to visit share photos, and we want to highlight great things at Mott Hall. So I wasn't in violation. And to be honest, the post that they're talking about is still there. Had I endangered a child, had a parent felt like somehow I had overstepped my boundaries, they would have notified me. No one has given me any written letter, called me, warned me, because they know there is no violation. And when you think about it, if you look at the chancellor's account, if you look at various individuals in the Department of Education when they go to schools and they take pictures, even on the DOE's website, they don't know if children have releases, but because children are in the school, they automatically assume. But how do you know that a parent wouldn't feel a way about that? Which is why Mott Hall had their own releases that was issued by the Department of Education. So that was the second thing. And then the third thing to talk about, I was critical of the current administration. In the article, it was cited that the way it's written, there were two paragraphs in the email that I sent the staff. So I did send an email to the staff after I sent the email to the principal. The email to the staff, first and foremost, said, I want to thank you on behalf of the scholars and the families of Mott Hall Bridges Academy. And I wanted to acknowledge how committed they were, but also recognizing that the culture the way it is today is not the one that I had set for the school. But with that said, I still love coming back to the school because it's a second home, and to be able to see the team, it felt like I was amongst family. The second paragraph, I then go into saying to them, although I opened the school, I always told them that this was our school and that they are also the catalyst of change. And they have planted seeds and disrupted the school to prison pipeline for those scholars who have graduated and those who are currently at the school. And so therefore, those individuals who have been appointed by the Department of Education would not understand the need to defy mediocrity and challenge the status quo. The writer of the article took what I said in terms of the culture had changed and the fact that those who have been appointed by the Department of Education could not defy mediocrity and made it seem like I was criticizing the current administration. The individuals who worked for me, who received that, because I didn't send it out to everyone. I sent it out to those who worked for me at the time that I was a leader. So it might have gone to 14 people, and it wasn't a DOE email. It was a Google account, their Google addresses. Those individuals were being charged with knowing that you are the ones who are supposed to ensure that the culture remains the same. That you're the ones who have been defying the status quo that challenges the system that puts our kids in prisons. The person who's appointed doesn't know. And that's not a knock to them, but they've been appointed. They weren't trained under the Montour Bridges vision. So the way it's translated to someone who's on the outside would be like, oh my God, she went into the school. She thinks she's still running things. She's being narcissistic, or she's being attitudinal, challenging, or disgruntled, of which I wasn't. So when you use those words to paint a picture of someone who actually only went to the school because individuals who were there were struggling with their morale and didn't know where else to go, and they felt like I was the only person who could actually support and assist them, and now I'm being targeted. And so all of that was a trigger for me, because what I experienced on April 13th and being told that I caused tension is what I experienced in my principalship under the leadership of the Department of Education. That anytime you're doing something in the best interest of children, anytime you are advocating or trying to protect those who need to be protected, you're then targeted. You're then treated as though you're problematic. And so to feel that way after literally the blood, sweat, and tears that went into opening up that school, of which in another episode, I can't wait to share with you just the process of what I had to go through to open up the school and then to sustain the school. How I was treated is reflective of what I experienced in my principalship. The targeted behaviors, the ways in which I was made to feel like I was problematic, even though all I was doing was standing up for those who needed to be advocated for. And here's the worst thing. My phone number has never changed. My phone number remains the same. I could have easily been called by the superintendent, who was a superintendent when I was in my principalship. But it speaks to relationships. And it also speaks to the language that we use and how it's intentional about disparaging people. You think about children, and when we classify them as defiant, when we classify them as derelicts, when we talk about how they're crazy, These words are not used in a way that we say, let's engage in a conversation so we can better understand this young person. Let's engage in a conversation so that we can get to a solution. The ways in which words are used have a lot of power. How they craft the narrative is also utilized so that the rest of the world or a community that's looking at what's happening then starts to formulate an idea that is contrary to who the person is or who they can be, right? And so throughout this whole experience, I needed to put myself first, because between the esophilic esophagitis that I experienced throughout my principalship that was related to a highly overactive acid reflux production, it was keeping me up at night. I started to feel the same symptoms. I started to realize that my kidneys, once again, could absorb all of this negativity. And by me being in remission, I could easily reverse something that I had worked so hard to get in a better standing. I'm not willing to die because I was willing to stand up for the young people. I'm not willing to do that. So I had to take a step back. And with that, I want folks to be very mindful of this. As parents, we trust the education system to do what's right for our children. But there is leadership that's in positions that make decisions every single day that's either in support of our young people or hinder our young people. If you think about the contributions that was made to Marco Bridges Academy based off of a vision to see young people have an exceptional experience. So the money that was contributed from Humans of New York, the opportunities that the scholars had to travel to various corporations, to meet different individuals, to travel to different colleges. All of that was intentional. It was part of a vision. When you attack me, you attack the very entity of what I created. And so those people who were in connection to Mount Hope Bridges Academy, they don't see how they could possibly stay connected to a source of trauma. When I think about the teachers who remain in that school building, who literally reached out because they felt, this is all I have. I don't know where else to go. I just need you to point me in the right direction. Maybe if you come in, the morale will get better. In my heart of all hearts, I knew Mott Hall is no longer my school. It's not a place that I should go. But at the same time, do you allow people to suffer? Especially after you've explained to them the various ways in which they needed to advocate for themselves. And somehow no one felt the need to support them, to represent them. This is what happens in schools in marginalized communities. People lose their voice and they're silenced. And so that was the intention. By quote unquote banning me, it would silence me. It would then make others know that if this can happen to Dr. Lopez, just imagine what can happen to you. And what I'm going to say is, think about what's happening to you already. If you are not living your best self, if you are dealing with the angst of work, if you are dealing with the feelings of being compromised, not having voice, your health is constantly up and down, the damage is already being done. I'm in a position where I can step away. I can regroup. And what I will say is, having to prove to people who took one article and Will Measure My Character speaks more about us and our ability to critically analyze situations. Folks need to pay attention to the children who are most impacted and to the community that will forever be what I say is violated, because they deserve better. We have a responsibility to check in. And when I say check in, anyone who has ever been connected to Mount Hope Bridges Academy, been connected to any of the teachers, connected to any of the parents, check in. You should probably make an appointment to take a visit. But those young people, they still need someone who believes in them, who wants the very best. And so let's go back to mental health. To the educators, I want you to take gentle care of yourselves. I want you to know that you are worth prioritizing, and that as much as you love this job, you have to recognize you have to be at your very best to do it. Don't think that what happened to me means that you cannot stand up for yourself or make an executive decision about finding somewhere better to be. The greatest leaders who had the most impact in this world, they were attacked, they were assassinated verbally or physically. And sometimes that happens. And I know plenty of people who have left their positions in the Department of Education or throughout various education systems and would say to me, Nadia, once you leave, you don't go back. And I understand and I get why. But there also is this thing about, we can't keep forgetting those who are voiceless. We can't keep putting ourselves in the position that we want to be in the mix. And when I say that, we like being at the events, or we want the next promotion. We're not willing to give that up because we've worked so hard. And so why ruffle feathers when you should be thinking about your future? And I will happily say this. I prayed for a very long time for God to give me purpose. I never prayed for a position, and I never prayed for the fame. I prayed to do His work and to have tremendous impact on the lives of individuals who look like me. So I'm not willing to settle and be okay with changing education, but being complicit. I'm not willing to move up in the ranks and not have any impact or make any change. Because at the end of the day, I want children to remember my name. I want parents to remember my name. For those who choose to do that, it's a question of who will say your name. Will it be the colleagues that you work with? Or will it be the children that you say you're in service of? At the end of the day, I will be fine. At the end of the day, this has shown me so much, and not just about people, but about who I am and how I need to lean on my faith. But I don't want people to lose hope. I am not the last, I am not the first, but I will always be the one to serve in detention with the rest of the disruptors and the rebels. Because as long as I have breath, I'm always going to speak up and speak out. And that's just that. Thank you for serving time with me here in detention. Don't forget to subscribe and to tell a friend so that this way you're up to date on new episodes that will drop every week.
You can also follow us on Instagram at Detention Podcast. If you want to learn more about my services as a coach, consultant, and keynote speaker, go to www.thelopezeffect.com. And let's stay connected on LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram by following me on my handle, The Lopez Effect. Lastly, if you have any topic ideas, questions or comments, or want to sponsor future episodes, please send me an email at detentionwithdrnadialopez@gmail.com. All of this information will be in the show notes, so don't worry if you didn't get it down. I also want to send a gentle reminder to my disruptors and rebels. It's okay for us to get into a little bit of good trouble, but please take gentle care of yourself, be well, and never forget to choose you.